Greetings and welcome to the pre-show, the Soundography pre-show. This is where we get a chance to talk to our backer, Daniel. Welcome.
Hi, guys.
And
I'm excited.
Of course, with me, as always, is Hammond as well.
Hi, guys. I'm excited.
I'm excited too. This is cool, and you're a pro at this, Daniel. You've done this before, maybe not directly to us, but you've been around with us for a while, and you were responsible for our Tokay, our Thomas Kalnacki listening that we did.
The gift of Tokay.
That's right, the gift of Tokay that keeps on giving. If you ask me.
Yeah, I bought it as a gift for my wife. So I mean, this is the first podcast I've done, so don't give me too much credit.
Oh, no, you're...
Me too, Daniel. Don't worry about it.
Podcast? What's a podcast? But you are responsible for the subject of our show today, which I think in a general term we'll just say is Chris Hall. But really there are two phases of Chris Hall's music. It's Stabbing Westward and The Dreaming. Now, tell us, why Chris Hall and why Stabbing Westward?
Well, Chris has been a pretty big influence on my life. I mean, I first heard Stabbing Westward when I was a junior in high school, and I've just kind of been listening to them since then. And I think just his vocals are just pretty unique, and I think they're pretty amazing. Over the years, I've kind of noticed that actually Walter kind of had this symbiotic relationship, and when they play together, it's even better. Because for a while, after Stabbing Westward broke up, There was The Dreaming, which was good. It was great for the time being. But to me, there was a very obvious and good change when Walter came back in to work with Chris again.
I would agree. And I really like, here's a little inside baseball. We've actually recorded, prior to pulling you into the call, we recorded our Stabbing Westward, The Dreaming show. So this is cool. You're getting us after we've listened to everything. But I kind of like that because it gives us
awesome.
Yeah, it gives us a chance to speak a little bit more knowledgeably about the phases between the two bands. I mean, because you've really got, I would say, even three phases. You've got the industrial Stabbing Westward. You've got the industrial pop of their self-titled album, their last album. And
yeah.
Then industrial, almost electronica of The Dreaming. And it's really cool to watch the evolution of the band. When did, the rejoining, basically, of the brain trust of Stabbing Westward, that occurred, what, the second Dreaming album?
Actually, for the last one.
For the last
third album.
Rising.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, really, really digging this. What are some things that you want us to kind of pick out as we're listening to this, as we're talking about it?
Well, for me, like, the thing that changed, that... As Chris would say, one of the concerts I went to, I actually poked fun at him because he would say, you know, this song's a love song. And then he would, you know, go into another couple sets and then go, this next song's a love song. Like, there are a lot of the themes are.
He's supposed to be an angry, angry lover.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely got a lot of stuff going on, clearly. But yeah, I basically just said, yeah, they're all love songs because there's a few exceptions, but I think almost all of it is just around relationships and just kind of how things work out between people. So I mean, I really like the way that kind of Walter kind of infuses the musical aspect of it. I don't really understand all the musical terminology for it, but he kind of adds that. And then with Chris's vocals, which just have such incredible range, he can go from a whisper to like screaming. It sounds so amazing to me.
Well, I'm glad you bring up Walter, because we were wrestling trying to figure out, is it Walter Flacus? Walter Flacus?
I think it's Flacus.
Flacus, okay. We wrestled with that while we were recording, and I think we said it both ways during the course.
We did.
Yeah, it's not a very... I don't think it's a very common name.
Yeah, for sure. Now, how many... You've seen them a bunch of times in concert.
So I've seen Stabbing Westward one... two, three times before they broke up. And then I've seen The Dreaming one, two, three, four, five times. And then I'm going to actually see Stabbing Westward in November, and I'm really excited about that.
Very cool. Now, with Stabbing Westward, did you see them as part of when they were opening up for like Depeche Mode or the Sex Pistols Reunited or any of that stuff, or were they all specifically Stabbing Westward shows?
They were Stabbing Westward. They were opening. I think they were in the first concert I saw them with. They were with Placebo.
Oh, okay.
And that did not. That was not a good relationship for those two bands. But okay. Yeah, I kind of missed the Depeche Mode. I came in kind of late to the show.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And would you say your favorite memory associated with Stabbing Westward or with Dreaming is from a concert, or is there something else that you kind of tie, connect them to, like a?
So I've got a lot of shared history. the first time I saw them, I drove up to San Francisco to see them. This was in the Darkest Days tour. And I just remember it was at Maritime Hall. It's this this concert hall that's on the second floor of this place. And just as they started, you know, the concert's going full stream and everybody's jumping up and down and the whole floor is buckling under just the weight of everybody jumping up and down.
Oh my God.
That was awesome. But then one time when I went to go see them in West Virginia, I basically had to leave work and I was working really late. So I was really worried about not making it on time. So I was driving 90 miles an hour down the freeway just to try to make sure I got there.
What would you have to do to get there?
Exactly. Right. Forget about speed limits. So when I got there, I found out that Chris had actually thrown out his voice and so he wasn't going to be playing. So I was, you know, originally going to be really bummed out, but Chris was like, he recognized me because I had basically, when they were, still doing like the Darkest Days tours, I helped them like hand out flyers and stuff like that. So he remembered me after all that time, even though I wasn't across the country. And like, was like, hey, how's it going? And just like introduced himself and said hi and everything. It was actually really cool.
Way cool. Wow. That's really, really cool. Do you have a favorite song between both of the bands, or you could even give us your favorite song from each of the bands?
Because we did.
So my favorite song from Stabbing Westward was definitely "Waking Up Beside You."
Okay. That's
and
one.
Then, in terms of the Dreaming, I really like "Alone."
Okay. Cool. Very cool. Awesome. Well, I'm really excited for this episode. It, you know, this was a band that I knew only through their covers. I'd heard their Garbage cover. I think I'd heard their Carpenters cover. Had no idea that they did a Depeche Mode cover. They do a great job with It's No Good. Really, really enjoyed the music this week. So thank you very much for making us do it.
So what's a
couple of fun facts for you guys?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, so the one thing I found out that was interesting is that they've actually done 12 soundtracks between Stabbing Westward and The Dreaming. They've been on 12 separate soundtracks. The other thing is that the bass from Ungod is actually the same bass from Hey Man, Nice Shot.
Really?
Yeah.
The bass line or the bass player? Like, you mean the bass line from...
Both. The bass player was originally with, he was working with both Filter and Stabbing Westward, and I guess he wrote it, and he ended up using it on both, they used it on both songs, and they both decided, okay, we're not going to sue each other over this, and that's actually why Stabbing Westward doesn't play Ungod in concert very much.
Oh, that's kind of
the same.
I'm totally going to listen to those two back-to-back and listen for that. That is super cool.
I smell a mashup.
No, it's been done. It's pretty cool. It's okay. Stuart Zechman was was playing on both bands. So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, Filter's another band. You know, we didn't even bring up Filter, but another band. I mean, Nine Inch Nails obviously seems like an influence. Filter, I could see as being an influence, certainly in their sound. So
yeah, they actually when Stabbing Westward first started, they kind of had a rivalry with the Smashing Pumpkins because they were both from Chicago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's so weird because I always associate the Smashing Pumpkins so distinctly with Seattle because of their appearance on the single soundtrack.
Right. Yeah. But very much a Chicago band. And Billy Corgan seems like such a nice guy. Who could feud with Billy Corgan?
Well, apparently Stabbing Westward, but it was a friendly rivalry. I mean, they were pushing each other to kind of push the envelope in terms of what they were doing.
Awesome. Kind of like Beach Boys and Beatles and stuff like that. Like the one-upping almost with the albums. Excellent. Well, Daniel, thank you so much, man. This is this has been a great week, and I hope you enjoy the show. Hope you like all the stuff that we say about the band, and I'm excited to hear what you think about the episode once you've heard it.
I'm excited to hear it. I want to hear what you guys think.
Fantastic. Well, one more time, big thank you. Thanks for being a Patreon. Thanks for supporting the show. And thanks for introducing. I'm going to say introducing, even though I knew one or two of their songs. I'm going to say thank you for introducing us to The Dreaming and Stabbing Westward.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So that's good.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear it, Evan. I kind of thought it would definitely be more up your alley. I threw in the covers just for Brian because I knew that's what he would like.
That was totally the frosting that got me into the cake.
So I need to make sure then that Dream Theater covers end up in our show and that the covers that Mushroomhead does end up more frequently up. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
the way to get into my heart.
Yeah, it's all about the covers.
About the covers. Very good. Well, thank you, Daniel.
You're welcome. Thank you guys for putting on the show. I love the show.
You bet. And here we go into that episode of Soundography. Welcome to another episode of Soundography, the crash course in music, one band at a time. My name is Brian Ebbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we are going to be looking at a first industrial rock band, at least for half of the show, talking about an industrial rock band. Our focus today is going to be on a performer named Christopher Hall. And he formed two bands, Stabbing Westward and The Dreaming, and carried with him a couple people that followed him between the two bands. But we got to throw out a big thank you first to Daniel Caramillo, or Caramillo?
I'm going to say Caramillo.
And you heard him at the very top of the show because he was a sponsor of an episode of Soundography. He was a patron for this episode with the intent of making us listen to Stabbing Westward and The Dreaming, which I enjoyed. I think we'll get into that later on, but I think you and I had similar opinions. We're going to get to that, further on in the show. But let's first talk about Chris Hall and Stabbing Westward. Stabbing Westward is an American industrial rock band. It was founded by Christopher Hall and Walter Flakus in 1986 while they were in college at Western Illinois State. They formed in Illinois, but they didn't release an album for 8 years.
That's a whole lot of incubation time.
That really is. And we'll find out as far as like if they did touring, if they did what they did as far as performing up until the release of that first album. They moved to Chicago in 1986 with the original lineup, which was Chris Hall on bass and vocals, Flakus on keys, and then Jim Clanen on guitar. In 1990, they released a 4-song demo. And Chris Hall toured with Di Warzow as the percussionist, and he and Flakus, or Flakus? Should I say Flakus or Flakus? What do you think? What's the verdict?
I think Flakus sounds better than Flakus. Flakus sounds like something you'd want to scrape from the bottom of your shoe.
Neither one of them sounds great. Like yeah. Flakus and Flakus.
Yeah, it really does sound like something your dentist is going to be worried about.
You've got a lot of Flakus buildup. They recruited others to be in the lineup, including Chris Vrenna of Nine Inch Nails on drums and Stuart Zechman on guitar. Let's get this out of the way as quickly as possible.
Yes.
You and I both in the notes, one of the first things that we said that was editorial about Stabbing Westward is the tremendous sound influence that it appears that Nine Inch Nails had on this band.
Yes. I'm glad that they had a Nine Inch Nails band member join them at one point because
it helps explain it.
Help explain it because if they hadn't, it would have just been like a poor man's Nine Inch Nails. It would have been 6-inch screws.
Right. The 4-inch rivets. Yeah. There's a uniqueness that they've got. I can't deny that. There's definitely an influence from Nine Inch Nails, but they do have a very consistent and a very unique sound. And I think there's a way to describe it as a consistency. You know, there's some bands we talk about where you get one song and you pretty much know how all the other songs are going to sound. I feel like as much as I enjoyed Garth Brooks, there was a little bit of that there. I imagine I could look back at some.
Wait, did you say you enjoyed Garth Brooks?
I enjoyed some of Garth Brooks. Yeah.
Wow. You need to go back and listen to that episode again.
Do I
need
to listen to it? Have I forgotten? Has it been so long since Garth Brooks that I've forgotten how I felt about Garth Brooks? Maybe that's true. Maybe there's something to that. But let's see. Looking back, you know, there were parts of Iron Maiden's tenure that felt like if you heard one Iron Maiden song, you've heard them all. Bay City Rollers kind of had that.
Sadly, Patsy Cline has that.
Patsy Cline had that. And, you know, that was because so much was recorded in such a short time.
Yeah.
You know what? New Order was one we said that too about too, didn't we? Yep. You know, you can listen to New Order and pretty much say, I don't know which album this is from.
Oh,
I know
actually, Order, Pet Shop Boys is actually probably more of a victim of that than New Order was.
Yeah. So, you know, there's times where that's the case, and you can still be a band that is consistent without being repetitive or boring. And I think that for me, Stabbing Westward was right on that line. They straddled that line. There was, you know, there were times that I didn't realize there was a song change, but I enjoyed what I was listening to.
Yep.
However, it's like, they changed the way they did the choruses on this one. It's like, oh no, this is a whole new song.
Yeah.
But
well, it's interesting. The EP, I don't know if it's Iwo Jima, cause what we had said Iwo Jima, but according to all the documentation, it's Iwo Jima's or Jesus.
It is Iwo Jima.
Okay.
Yes.
And, that song, Violent Mood Swings on the EP, it's about 3 minutes too long.
Yeah.
And then when they re-released it on one of their main albums, I think it was their first album.
It was on Ungod, and it was, a little over 5 minutes long.
Yeah, it was shorter. It wasn't as short as I'd wanted it to be, but at least it was more of a song instead of a wade through violent mood swings.
Yeah, it kind of was. That's a great example, a great way to describe it. And it's good that, you know, all right, the EP is kind of to like test the waters, and then you release the album with the 1.0 versions of the songs after the beta test.
Yeah.
This was released, by the way, in December of 1993. I'm sorry, the EP was released before that. Their first album was released in December of 1993, early 1994. Iwo Jima or Iwo Jesus, depending on where you look at it, the EP was released in 1992. The early version, as we mentioned, Violent Mood Swings, ended up on the Cyberflesh Conspiracy. And this was good enough to get them noticed by Columbia Records, who offered to sign them to their label.
Again, it's going to be hard for me not to sound like I'm being crappy, but that Violent Mood Swings on the EP was after, 8 years of incubation.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know if the...
Okay, you're right. You're right. I retract the statement, Your Honor.
Yeah. Your Honor, I retract that statement. But yeah, no, I know what you mean. And, you know, there's some songs that need time to gestate and then be reborn.
Actually, I think what that song needed, and I think it was what they got, and I'm not being crappy, is the fact they needed a producer to help them shape it and know when that they were done. I think a producer served them a world of good in particular with that song.
That's a great example. What's your favorite example of a band or an artist that re-releases a song, maybe even under a different band name or solo or whatever, that totally redoes the song and says, this is the way I intended the song to be? Like, just as an example, Eric Clapton's unplugged version of Layla, where it became a completely different song. And it's like, all right, that's a great reinterpretation of your own song. Can you think of another example you like?
I'm going through my favorites, trying to think if they're the lead singers have all ducked out and done something.
I'll throw one out while you're thinking. Yeah. Sting and the Police. So during the Police tenure, they released Shadows in the Rain. I want to say it was on Zenyatta Mundata, one of the later songs. And it is, you know, I don't want to use this term again because I don't want to slather the episode with it, but a slog. I mean, it was a very a very monotonous, almost a throwaway track on Zenyatta Mandata, where you've got, you know, great songs like Don't Stand So Close to Me and De Do Do Do, De Da Da Da. And you've got this Shadows in the Rain, which is like this. And it's like this really slow with echoey vocals and stuff like that. Actually, I think it might have been the bass line I did might have been from Voices in My Head. But anyway, Shadows in the Rain, still echoey vocals, monotonous. Oh. And on the Dream of the Blue Turtle, Sting released it as a solo track with that whole Marsalis jazz vibe, and it was great. And it like reinvented the song. I'm like, all right, this is the way that song should have been done from the start.
So I will give... I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I can give one example, and it's less to do with the song being redone than having them go into the need to edit it down for either a radio release or for a single release or something like that. And that would be Pull Me Under by Dream Theater, because that's an 8-minute song and I like it, but at 8 minutes, it, after a while, you feel like you got pulled under. So when they released the radio version of it, that runs still kind of long, but they edited it down, it's far more digestible and enjoyable. And I think they did the same thing with Lie off of their second or third album, mm-hmm. where the radio edit actually does it a world of good to make it something where you can say, hey, you got 4 minutes? Yes, you do. Not 16 minutes or 8 minutes or whatever it is.
Do you feel like they kind of abridge it and give you the best part of the track?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not the same thing you're asking, but it's the only example I can come up with without having to dig through a bunch of stuff.
I think that is a good example. Totally appreciate that example. All right, back to Stabbing Westward. So in 1994, they released their album Ungod, or December 1993. David Suicott of Machines of Loving Grace joined them on drums for this album. It was recorded in London and produced by producer John Fryer. And this got them enough attention to where they opened for Depeche Mode on their Exotic tour in the summer of 94. And that fall, they toured with Killing Joke.
You know, weirdly enough, there was a band out of Provo, Utah called Ritual. They only released like one cassette tape EP thing. And I think it had like 6 songs on it. And until I listened to Stabbing Westward, I always had a different classification because they didn't sound like anything else I'd listened to. But I liked them. Listening to this music this week, Ritual really wanted to be Stabbing Westward when they grew up, and I have no idea what happened to Ritual, but I liked them.
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
I appreciate the fact that now I can put that they had their inspiration in Stabbing Westward, because they were very unique. It was basically two guys through a distortion pedal with a Macintosh.
Oh, really? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Fun band.
Right. Yeah, sounds like something just real, real good party music. Sales of Ungod, unfortunately, were sluggish despite being on tour with Depeche Mode. Near the end of the tour, Suicott left the band, and he was quickly replaced by Andy Kubicheski.
I am so glad you're saying these names, because when I was typing them, I'm like, that sounds like they're fielding a hockey team.
Forward. Andy is apparently in the 1940s hockey team.
Yeah.
Kubicheski. The song Nothing was featured in the movie Bad Boys and during the closing credits for Johnny Mnemonic, which means a lot of people who went and saw Johnny Mnemonic never heard
the song.
Including me in theaters, that was the only movie I ever walked out of was Johnny Mnemonic. We eventually rewatched it for Film Sec, and I sat through the whole thing, but I don't even know if I stayed for the credits when I watched it on Netflix.
So you're going to hear throughout this episode that they've done a lot of soundtrack stuff. And I've never seen Johnny Mnemonic. I can totally see some of the places where they end up in soundtracks totally fit. I don't understand how they fit up and got up into the Bad Boys soundtrack, except for maybe, again, this will be the last time I bring it up, they were cheaper than Nine Inch Nails, because that Nothing song could have been lifted directly from an early Nine Inch Nails album. I don't want it. I don't
And I'm curious, there were two movies called Bad Boys. I guess one was in the 80s, the one with Sean Penn. Never mind. That was like...
No, this is the Bad Boys.
This is the one with Martin Lawrence and Will Smith. Okay. So the real, the actual...
the credible? No, what we? How do we refer that at? The
legitimate Bad Boys? By the way, Bad Boys, as of 3 hours ago, the news is reporting that Bad Boys 3 has been pulled from Sony's release schedule. So,
oh man.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news to the Bad Boys fans.
The Bad News Boys.
The Bad News Boys. I'm going to be the bearer of Bad News Boys. Let's see. So nothing was featured in Bad Boys, and the movie Mortal Kombat used Lies, Lost, and Can't Happen Here. But when you went and bought the Mortal Kombat soundtrack, you could not find those songs.
Okay, and they are a perfect fit for Mortal Kombat.
I think so. It's funny because you hear, with the exception of Bad Boys, I think you nailed it. The fact that Johnny Mnemonic, Mortal Kombat, I could see, if somebody said, oh yeah, they were on the Hackers soundtrack, I'd say, psh, totally believe it. Mm-hmm. Totally on board with that. There was
they were on Spawn too. So, I mean, that totally fits, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah, so these guys really found a niche as far as the soundtrack releases, and they fit on there. And I hate to say it, you might be right about, well, we could get these guys for half the price of Nine Inch Nails.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's certainly possible that, that was a thought, at least by one of these soundtrack
music supervisors. I could totally see that happening.
Yeah. For the 1996 album, Wither, Blister, Burn, and Peel. Love that title, by the way.
No commas.
So it's just Wither, Blister, Burn. Wither, Blister, Burn, and Peel.
So it's Satan's law firm.
That's right. Have you sold your soul recently and are looking for a cash settlement? Call the offices of Wither, Blister, Burn, and Peel. If only I had. I've got. You know what? Let's try this one more time here. Hold on. Have you been injured in an accident?
You can't laugh. That was perfect.
I can't do it without laughing.
We just broke this episode.
Andy Kubicheski took on some writing duties. He played with The, recorded with Nine Inch Nails, and played with the band Prick. He had also been the vocalist for the band Exotic Birds. So I'll have to look back at that. So that would have been around the Mind Bomb time for, I think, The.
Okay.
They're one of my favorite bands. They're another one I'd like to throw into the soundography list at some point. But
season four, $50.
All I have to do is sponsor an episode of my own damn show. But again, so another Nine Inch Nails collection. Because Chris Vanna was drums from Nine Inch Nails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And again, I'm really glad that these exist to kind of make me feel better about the sound comparison.
Yeah, totally. So Andy played the rest of the band, Stabbing Western, a bunch of demos that he had, and many of those tracks ended up on the next two releases, this one and 1998's Darkest Days. During the recording sessions, which by the way took place in New York this time at the Bearsville Sound Studios, Sellers and Kubicheski also took on the majority of the guitar parts because they didn't have a full-time guitar player at the time. This was a success for the band, and the album was certified gold. Shame and What Do I Have to Do were released as singles and got the band heavy rotation on MTV, Much Music, and on the radio.
So the only real thing I can say about this going in was I knew What Do I Have to Do.
Yeah, you recognize that one. Yeah, I did too. There was another one that I recognized. I thought it was from this album. I guess it is from the next album. But talk about, again, that they nailed that industrial sound.
Wow, look at you.
What's that?
Playing clips.
You heard that?
Yeah.
Well, how did that work then? The song, What Do I Have to Do, which you heard a little clip of there a second ago, was featured in the movie Masterminds and an episode of Smallville. Again, you know, the comic book connection or the sci-fi fantasy connection, the fact that Johnny Mnemonic, Mortal Kombat makes sense. Wasn't Masterminds the one with Sigourney Weaver and...
I thought it was Malcolm in the Middle kid was in that one. I thought it was a funny film. It had like Paul Giamatti and the Malcolm in the Middle kid.
Well, see, this one's listing the most recent one, which was last year with Zach Galifianakis and Owen Wilson and Kristen Wiig. The one, there it is right there. Patrick Stewart and Vincent Kartheiser. Did you know about this movie?
No.
Trapped in a school in which a gang of criminals has seized control, a young troublemaker fights.
That's right. Yeah, this is the one. It has, I think it's a Malcolm in the Middle kid.
I have not gotten to his name yet. Frankie Muniz. I've not seen him.
Okay, maybe I'm getting him confused with a different one. But this is like a kid's film.
Really? Okay. Well, I'm guessing with Patrick Stewart. Oh, you know who you're thinking of. You know who this was.
Who?
This is the guy from Mad Men who played Pete.
Right.
Yeah, Pete. What's his face? Pete from Mad Men.
From Wither, Blister, Burn, and Peel.
That's right. The advertising firm. I think I might have to look at this thing.
Is that Bradley Whitford? Is that who you're thinking?
No.
Okay.
I'm thinking. What do you mean? No, Vince Kartheiser is the guy who played Pete.
Okay. All right.
And I think he must have been the kid because 1997, he would have been young enough to play the kid.
Yeah. Brad Whitford's in it too, probably is the buddy.
Oh, really? Bradley Whitford was old back then too, though, right?
Was he?
He was born 1915. He's 10 years older than me. So in 1997. Okay.
Yeah. He must have been like a sleazy teacher or something then, because he can't play a nice guy.
No. All right. Mark Eliopoulos. I'm going to say Mark Eliopoulos was brought in to play main guitar parts in when they were performing this album live. By the way, that that song, What Do I Have to Do, got them a spot opening for the Sex Pistols, who had just reunited when they went out on tour. So opening for Depeche Mode, opening for the Sex Pistols, it's a pretty good resume for these guys.
Yeah, they were running with a really good crowd. And I'm not saying that their stuff didn't deserve it, but there's something to it that, like you said, you're not sure, unless they said, thanks everyone, our next song is...
Right.
Sometimes you're not sure when things happen. If they did a medley, I would be lost.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. Where's one song end and the next one begin?
Yeah.
For their 1998 album, Darkest Days, they moved to L.A. to record, to work on the album. It was envisioned as a four-act story, but it never got marketed as that for the album. The first single, Save Yourself, did well. That was one I definitely recognized as soon as I heard it. But the album didn't sell as well as Wither, Blister, Burn, and Peel. Continued to tour with bands like Placebo, The Cult, Monster Magnet, and Depeche Mode.
So this was big time. 1998 was huge. Monster Magnet. I think that was that Space Lord album they were touring with at that point.
Absolutely, yeah.
So this was huge Monster Magnet time for them. And the Cult was, I think they were touring with Metallica at the time too. So there was a lot of, you know, elbow rubbing that could have gotten them bigger.
Yep, absolutely. The Thing I Hate was featured in the Duke Nukem Time to Kill video game. Torn Apart was featured as a remix with Josh Wink on the Spawn movie soundtrack. We kind of mentioned that a little bit earlier. And Save Yourself was featured in Urban Legend and Tekken, as well as an episode of True Blood a few years later in 2012. Haunting Me was used in the movie The Faculty. That one feels like, it's funny, we were talking about masterminds earlier. The description of the movie felt like, oh, well, that's basically The Faculty, isn't it? And sure enough, you know, they appear on that soundtrack as well.
And The Faculty, just a little side note, The Faculty actually had a friend of mine in it.
Really?
Yeah. Her name is Catherine Willis. She's an actress, and she was in, she's done a few films with Robert Rodriguez. So,
really?
A little shout out to Catherine Willis.
She one of the students, obviously?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And was she kind of in one of the major roles?
No, she was more of a probably a secondary, even tertiary character.
Yeah, but she had lines.
Uh-huh, right? She did. Mm-hmm.
She's got a SAG card.
Yep, she sure does.
The video for Sometimes It Hurts was conceived as a Wizard of Oz themed story, but the label feared that they would be sued, so they took most of the references of the Wizard of Oz out of it. That's too bad.
Well, and also that's really interesting too, because nowadays everybody makes references to the Wizard of Oz, and they don't even blink twice, I don't think.
Right. Yeah. Can you really get sued if you write a song that references a movie? I guess you can.
Even Blues Traveler's Runaround. Not run around. A Hook video was a Wizard of Oz referenced video.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what the precedence is for that. Like, if you can, how loose your references have to be to something to avoid a lawsuit if you write a song that is inspired by a movie. And then just before they started recording the next album, Columbia Records dropped them.
Oh,
is it for that? 2001, 3 years later, they released their self-titled album, Stabbing Westward. After they signed with a new label, their manager wanted them to make a more pop-influenced album. Of course, they fought against that idea. Mark Eliopoulos was fired by management and replaced with Derek Hawkins. The demos for the self-titled album were considered too dark, and they were replaced by new pop-tinged riffs.
And so by the way, I have to admit, I like the self-titled album and the kind of the, I don't want to call it major key steps they took, but it's definitely a less doomy, dark kind of sounding album. And I'm not saying I don't like doom and dark, don't get me wrong, but with their overall sound, I really enjoyed the happier, which a weird word, happier guitar solos.
No, I mean you're right about that. The I mean, even the tone of the song titles, Angel, Breathe You In, Happy. Their song titles have kind of taken a more pop themed turn, shorter song titles too, which is kind of like what you're seeing these days as far as stuff that seems to do really, really well. Mm-hmm. So Far Away was released as a single. The album sold well in Australia, but it failed to sell worldwide. And then in 2002, a year later, the band announced that they were breaking up in February.
Can I just say that in the Wikipedia album, their post-breakup rundown of things really sounded like something that they would put at the end of Animal House or That Thing You Do with the pictures of them in little summaries.
Bill went on to become a game show host.
No, and I'm not kidding. Here are a few of them. Walter Flaccus worked with a couple of bands and was working for Chicago radio station. He joined The Dreaming in 2015. Jim Clannon opened and operated a DQ in Illinois.
DQ?
Mm-hmm, a DQ.
They don't even spell out Dairy Queen. They just say like a DQ. Opened up a DQ.
I think it said Dairy Queen. I think I put DQ, but still. Okay. It was still one of those things where I'm like, and he opened up a Dairy Queen, and they went on to work for TV, and he, you know, it was just really funny how it could have been
totally
Holiday Road or something, and then with pictures and subtitles.
Totally. So that was it for Stabbing Westward. Chris Hall formed the band The Dreaming after the breakup. And over the course of the next few years, they released three albums and did well. We're going to talk about those.
And I really, really liked The Dreaming a lot more than Stabbing Westward.
I did too. And it's funny because the here's the way it kind of goes. It's so Stabbing Westward, very heavy industrial rock for the first several albums. And then they come out with that self-titled album, which starts to go a little bit more pop. Then they break up. The Dreaming kind of picks up where Stabbing Westward left off, and I think adds a little bit more electronic, like almost a little bit of EDM into the industrial. I'd say the foundation is still industrial, but they went from industrial heavy metal to industrial pop to industrial electronic mm-hmm. for the Dream.
Yeah, and there are parts of the Dreaming that I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed.
Oh, me too. Me too. We're going to get to that. So 2008, they released The Dreaming, Etched in Blood. This was what Chris Hall, of course, started producing after that. Walter Flacus worked with a couple of bands and was working for a Chicago radio station, as we just mentioned. He joined The Dreaming in 2015. Jim Clannon. Oh, I guess this is all the stuff he says. Andy Kubicheski worked, or Kuba. I don't think I'm saying that right. Kubizuski, maybe? Andy Kubizuski worked with other bands and then produced the band Tattoo, that Russian teen, are they or aren't they, lesbians duo that came out with They're Not Gonna Get Us. And
what was that other one, their big hit?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I just remember they reminded me of the twins for the hallway from The Shining.
Shining, really?
Yes.
What was their big hit? Oh my gosh, it's going to drive me nuts. Let's see.
While you're looking that up, I'll finish the thought saying that he also composed music for dozens of TV shows, mostly reality TV shows like Storage Wars and just different kind of short themes for reality shows.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All the things she said, by the way, was
that's it.
Yep. In 2003, they released The Essential Stabbing Westward, kind of a compilation album collecting all the stuff that they did for that first band. And then another compilation album called What Do I Have to Do? And I'm guessing these things were kind of a way of getting all of those soundtrack contributions and things like that into one place, into a place where people could buy it. One last attempt by the label to kind of say, let's get these out one more time before.
Also, I can say the other thing that they've done too is they really did embrace the remix technology, and a lot of their stuff has lots of different versions of it with remixes from, you know, other famous DJs or producers or whatever on there. And some of those provide a very interesting take on their original pieces of music.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Love the covers too. Love all the covers mm-hmm. they do.
Yeah.
I think they do a great job.
Have you done a Stabbing Westward cover show yet?
I haven't, because there aren't that many covers of Stabbing Westward. You know, it's got to be, there has to be a good balance between ones that they've done. I've played them on the show for other people, for other cover stories. But in order for me to do a Stabbing Westward / The Dreaming cover story, there have to be covers of both of those bands, and there just isn't.
Okay, indie folks, get on that.
That's right. Do a cover of Save Yourself. That seems like the easy pickings for.
Or What
cover.
Do I Have to Do? I want to hear Driving Mrs. Satan. Sure. What Do I Have to Do?
They could do it. They could totally pull that off. 2011, they released Puppet. And
creepy album cover. Creepy album cover. Love the album. The album cover is off-putting.
Yeah, a lot of these are, right? I mean, it's they have a very – I don't want to say gothic. I don't want to say goth. But it's – you know, they have a very unique look to them that's got that blurry handwritten logo kind of stuff. Because I would say Ungod is also a fairly creepy album.
It is.
Cover.
Yep. It reminds me of everything, kind of reminds me as if it's a screen cap from a Tool video.
Yeah, totally. Totally. That kind of black and white or duotone kind of appearance. I would totally agree with that. Puppet, by the way, I think my favorite of all the albums we listened to from the whole collection. Mm-hmm. From Stabbing Westward and The Dreaming. In 2015, they released the album Rise Again. They played two shows for the 30th anniversary, and then they reunited in 2016 to celebrate their 30-year anniversary and reportedly toured as well last year. And then this most recent year, 2017, currently The Dreaming released From the Ashes. This was more of a remix album collecting remix versions, like we were saying, of songs that they released on Puppet and Rise Again and The Dreaming EP.
Yeah. Yep. And that's where we are.
That's where we are right now. So got you all cut up with Stabbing Western the Dreaming. I will say this, and just kind of to put a pin in it, I enjoyed this week probably more than I would have expected, you know, knowing the content of it. I'm not a big industrial fan. I like Nine Inch Nails. I like some of the music by The Cult and stuff like that. It's certainly not my go-to genre, but I will say these guys, they do a good job. And Chris Hall has done a good job of evolving the band from, like I mentioned, industrial heavy metal into an industrial EDM. And I think it's that newer incarnation that I happen to like and will continue listening to.
Well, I have to say, I will be picking up the Essential Stabbing Westward album because I think I like enough of their stuff that having their essentials, their greatest hits,
yeah,
would be worth having. I will continue to follow the Dreaming because I really like what he's doing with them. He, like you said, he's really matured as a performer and as a musician. And I'm kind of down with everything he's doing.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Well, give us some statistics in general and notes.
Okay, so we've talked about a lot of their soundtrack work, but there are a few that we didn't mention. There's one that was on the Escape from L.A. soundtrack, the seminal Escape from L.A. movie.
Right. Again, it's a perfect fit for mm-hmm. these guys.
Yeah, and their song, it was called Dawn.
If somebody in your movie is either hacking or getting beaten with a lead pipe, then Stabbing Westward / The Dreaming is a great band to put on your soundtrack.
Or if you have a motorcycle that gets engulfed by your magic cape.
Right. Yes. I think somebody still gets beaten with a lead pipe in Spawn.
Well, then explain this one. They do a cover of Bizarre Love Triangle for Not Another Teen Movie.
Right.
That's the way that it goes. It's what nobody knows. While every day my confusion grows. Every time I see you fall.
Yeah, because nobody gets beat with a lead pipe.
No, but they do have the exchange student walking around naked the entire film.
Right. There you go. Yep.
They do Top of the World, a cover of a Carpenter song for the Triple M Music Challenge 2 compilation.
This is great because this is a series of albums tied to an Australian, what they call a breakfast show. So it's like a morning show, but they call it a breakfast show in Australia.
So like Todd Nairn?
Yes. Four people in our listening audience got it. No, I'm sure more than that. But so it's they get them on, they do a couple of their songs, they do an interview, and then they are given the task of covering a specific song that's kind of like a guilty pleasure, but just really considered to be not something in their typical genre. And so they were given the task covering the Carpenters' Top of the World, which also is, you know, that's a song you can do great covers of. Shonen Knife do a great cover of that song, and that's out of there.
It goes back to my thing, is if you have a good song at its core, anybody can do a cover of it, and it's still a good song.
Got the sun in my eye. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a dream. Everything I want the world to be is now coming true, especially for me. And the reason is
ABBA is a perfect example of that. I've got versions of ABBA songs that cover the entire spectrum, and they always sound like an ABBA song, which are good songs.
Yes.
Yep. They never really had any large-scale success as far as the charts go, but they had a lasting mark on pop culture because of the amount of exposure they got from soundtracks. They were on soundtracks that actually were better than many of the movies they were on. And therefore, like the Mortal Kombat soundtrack alone is legendary, but they were not on that one. Take that thought out. But they've had a lot of impact on pop culture just because of the fact that they were exposed to so many ear holes just by being so prevalent in films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, totally. And probably as well as the opening acts as they were for so many other bands, right? Depeche Mode. And
also, the answer to the trivia question is these people were not Nine Inch Nails. Who were they?
Right. The category is sounds like Nine Inch Nails. Sorry, we were looking for Stabbing Westward. Anyway. All right, let's get to their soundtrack, or I'm sorry, their Stairway to Heaven songs. So I'm doing both. I'm going to look this up for both Stabbing Westward and The Dreaming.
Okay.
And you're saying things like Haunting Me, Violent Mood Swings, Shame. It comes down to your choice is What Do I Have to Do? My choice is Save Yourself, right? Because they were both, I think, big hits for him. Here's what's funny. If you look at Stabbing Westward, you're absolutely right. They were their most played song is indeed What Do I Have to Do? So you totally nailed that.
I'm really glad it's not Violent Mood Swings, because I don't know if an audience could sit through 8.5 minutes of that song. Tell me. Original form.
Ninth on the list. And you wonder how many versions of that they do. But rounding out for Stabbing Westward rounds out with Shame, Nothing, Save Yourself is fourth, Sometimes It Hurts, Drugstore, Waking Up Beside You and Haunting Me, and then Violent Mood Swings. Now, if we go to The Dreaming, it changes up a little bit. Number one for The Dreaming is covering Stabbing Westward's Save Yourself.
Interesting.
Yes, and then Breathing, and then Shame, another Stabbing Westward song, and then What Do I Have to Do in fourth place. So it's actually kind of a reverse, right? You get the What Do I Have to Do in first and Save Yourself in fourth for Stabbing Westward, and then reverse for The Dreaming, Save Yourself, and What Do I Have to Do. So kind of funny. They also include on their list It's No Good, a great Depeche Mode cover, the song There Will Be Blood, Sometimes It Hurts.
We've covered another artist that broke off and does covers of his own stuff in Streetlight Manifesto and Tokay.
Oh, yes. Very much so.
And
yes.
I'm because they both came from the same household as far as patron sponsors.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if they planned it that way for us.
Well, it shows that Daniel and Priscilla, it shows that they, when they're fans of something, they get all of it, right? They don't just go, oh, I like Stabbing Westward and I'm done. It's, I like Stabbing Westward. Who's involved in that? Christopher Hall. I want to find out everything that Christopher Hall does. Kind of like the Thomas Kalnacki thing, right? Where it's we're going to get everything that Thomas Kalnacki does, no matter what band it is.
Yep.
And I respect that, because there's artists that I'll do that for. Even producers. I've talked about Greg Kirsten on the show before. Mm-hmm. But I will buy albums from artists that I don't usually buy. Pink, Avril Lavigne, whatever. Because they were produced by Greg Kirsten, because I love his production work. He's actually produced the brand new Foo Fighters album. There's only one single been released from that so far, Just Run. But and I love Foo Fighters, so that's an easy one for me to pick up. But it's made me even more excited for the next Foo Fighters album, knowing that he was involved with it.
I've taken that love a step further, and I will follow every band member of certain bands and into their side projects.
Sure.
Not just one, but every, which can get expensive.
Depends, right? If they're prolific. Yes, exactly. I wonder who the... What band do you think? I mean, I guess the Beatles would be a pretty expensive one. If you're a big Beatles fan, you pick up every Paul McCartney solo album, everything he's involved with, all of John Lennon's solo stuff, all of George Harrison's solo stuff before he passed away.
Yoko's solo stuff.
Right, exactly. How far do you go? Do you go Billy Preston? Do you go
Julian Lennon?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, see? And Sean Lennon?
Mm-hmm.
You could really go down an expensive rabbit hole with that stuff.
Well, the Eagles, too?
Eagles is a good one. Yeah, because it feels like almost all of them, maybe with the exception of like Timothy B. Schmidt, released solo albums. Mm-hmm. Certainly Henley and Walsh.
And Fry.
Fry, yeah.
Attorneys at law.
Right. Have you been attacked by a large bird?
But I mean, everyone knows Dream Theater. I've followed everything that all of them have done as solo artists and in other groups. Spock's Beard, those guys, Mushroomhead, we know that I've kind of gone nuts following those guys.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know. You know, bands like Squeeze and Crowded House pretty much stay pretty self-contained. I mean, Neil Finn has done solo stuff, and he's done some guest work on other albums and stuff. But there's not a lot of course, Split Ends is a good example, but not a lot of other things that you need to pick up if you're collecting everything that Neil Finn does.
Who's Clapton's supergroup?
Well, Derek and the Dominoes, Cream.
That's it. That's the one.
Yeah. Yeah. Eric Clapton would be one where you've got a lot of different bands to pick up to follow.
Yep.
Huh. All right. Let's get to our playlists. This is where we pick some songs that we heard this week. All right, getting to my playlist first, there's going to be some covers. I'm going to warn you right now. The first one is a garbage cover. It's Number One Crush. Song, if I remember correctly, that Garbage recorded for the Romeo and Juliet soundtrack, the Baz Luhrmann movie with Leonardo DiCaprio, and these guys do a great job of making it their own. It still has that stalkery desperation that the original has. You can't do the song without that, because it's "I would die for you, I would kill for you," and it's kind of this creepy, you know, professing your undying commitment to somebody. They do a great job of it, and it's from a Dreaming release. I don't know what they recorded it for, if it was for a soundtrack or whatever. It came in as a as an individual sidetrack for them. We're going to go to the Stabbing Westward self-titled album for I Remember.
Like yesterday, that we were making plans for the future.
But it's been so after listening to a bunch of Westward and kind of getting to this album, which again was more pop influence for sure, this song was very surprisingly touching. It's more of a ballad, a slower song, and I like the style of it, the chord progression, unique. And so it was a breath of fresh air. I think that whole album really was a breath of fresh air. My playlist number three is End in Tears. This is from the Dreaming album Puppet, which I really like. It was a perfect marriage of the industrial and electronic. This is kind of like the, if you're looking for that sound that the Dreaming has, this is the Puppet is a great album to look at, and this song is a great one to look at from that album. Less Nine Inch Nails on that one, kind of more Muse sounding.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Control from the Stabbing Westward album Ungod.
Control.
Not Janet Jackson. This is one that I felt like I heard before as well. It sounded very familiar to me, but I really liked it. And this is one that kind of blends into the song before it and after it. Well, Lost, the album opens with Lost, which is kind of like this fade in background noisy kind of thing. And then it goes bam right into control, and then it goes right into nothing. And I feel like that's a really good three song set. It feels like one unit, one cohesive unit.
Yeah.
It's also very Nine Inch Nails. It's very ninny.
Ninny.
And then finally, one more cover, their Depeche Mode cover of It's No Good, which was also included on the Puppet album.
It is written in the sun.
that the desperation of the Depeche Mode original, but it actually throws in more of like a saw blade edge to it, like a little bit more anger in it, which I think really adds something to the song. So It's No Good from the album Puppet. And if you're wondering, you pretty much can rely on the fact that I'm recommending you pick up the Dreaming album Puppet, because it's really, really good.
I think between the Stabbing Westward Essential and the Puppet, you cover both of our sweet spots.
I think so.
Either that or they're self-titled.
The Stabbing Westward self-titled. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think so too. I think because that does get more digestible, more palatable for people who aren't into the whole industrial thing of the first couple albums.
You know what they were missing? They were missing a track on The Crow.
Oh, my God. No kidding. How were they not on The Crow soundtrack?
I have no idea, but it just dawned on me that they needed to be on The Crow.
For sure.
All right, my picks. Dawn from the Escape from LA soundtrack. I really like the groove on this one. It was more, I felt like that they were kind of entering into more of a groove metal instead of more of industrial with this one. And I really liked the way it just kind of picked up momentum and stayed there. I really enjoyed their cover of Send Me an Angel. I've kind of got a weak spot for this song anyway. I've got like four covers of it in my collection. So tell me lies and don't be untrue. It all comes back to you. Open fire, fire. My burning heart. I've never been lucky enough. My defenses are down. A kiss or a frown. I can't survive on my own. And their version is really, really good. It's a bonus track, and it's not available on streaming services, so you have to kind of dig around and look for it, maybe streaming on Hint on Hint YouTube or something, because it's there.
The Dreaming album.
Yeah. Yes, it is from The Dreaming. Sorry, yes. Etched in Blood, The Dreaming.
Yes. Right, yes, Etched in Blood, yes.
So Far Away from their self-titled album. I really enjoyed, like I said, the pop that was mixed in this whole album. And this song, So Far Away, was actually a really, really good example of it. Then I picked Painkillers from The Dreaming, which is Rise Again, was the album it was on. This might have been my favorite song I listened to this week. It was new to me, but I, for whatever reason, this was a great song, and it's one I'm going to continue to have around.
Cool.
And then I'm going to wrap it out with There Will Be Blood, also from The Dreaming, also from the album Puppet.
Glad you chose that one. I really like it. And I wonder if it was influenced by the movie title.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, maybe.
Get sued.
They removed all references from the video.
Right. We can't mention drinking a milkshake in this song anymore.
Yeah, blister, burn, and peel. Then we'll come after you if you. This is the song. This song was so in my musical comfort zone that I could not put it on the list.
Yeah.
This got me in all the right spots as far as my musical comfort zone goes.
Another really good example of like, all right, I want to hear one song that these guys, or one song that kind of represents the band that they're talking about, and There Will Be Blood is the one to go to.
Yeah. Yep. I'm glad I made my list first then.
No, because I would have picked it. I would have picked it had you not. Yes. All right. Well, wow. That's a good way to wrap things up. One more time, I want to thank Daniel For supporting the show, for being a patron, and for recommending that we listen to this band. Again, it was a band that I think I'd heard of just through covers. I think I had a few things in my library already, but only because of Coverville, only because I played them on the show. So getting to hear some more of their stuff and some more of their the full releases, the deep cuts, that sort of thing, really enjoyed that. So big thanks from both of us to Daniel, and also for appearing at the very top of the show. Next week, we'll be looking at The Art of Noise. Now, it's kind of funny to go from an industrial band to a band that uses heavy equipment in the making of their music.
I'm looking forward to this. I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. I have been a fan of Art of Noise since the early 80s, and I cannot wait to dig into them like this.
Me too. Yeah, this is this will be good. One of my first concerts, actually, the Rainbow Music Hall in the 80s was The Art of Noise. They were touring for In No Sense Nonsense, which was the album that had the
Max Headroom. Yeah, was he performing with them?
He did. Yeah, they had a video screen behind them, and he came on. You know, they had pre-recorded. What's his face? I remember the guy's name that played him.
Barkley.
What's that?
Barkley.
No.
I know.
Barkley. Your Star Trek? Is that a Star Trek reference? I love it. If it is.
It is. Yeah. Because I always thought it was the same guy for years. I thought it was the same guy.
No, Matt Frewer is the guy. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, we're both looking forward to The Art of Noise. So check that out. That'll be next week right here on Soundography. If you want to get in touch with us, maybe you want to help support the show and make us listen to something as well. Well, you can do that. Go to patreon.com/soundography to be a supporter of the show. If you want to email us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com is the way to do that. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at the Soundography right there. And then everything else, soundography.com. That's the home base. That is the nucleus of this whole franchise, soundography.com. Of course, you can listen to all of our past episodes, maybe find an artist that that we covered in one of our first couple seasons and see if we did them justice. I don't know. Always have the playlist that we talk about in our show notes, link to it on Spotify, so you can go listen to it. And of course, a link to an album on Amazon. This time, it's probably going to be The Essential Stabbing Westward. I think that's a really good starting place to go for both of these bands. But you also do want to check out some of the, I think Puppet by The Dreaming is another good one to start with. That's going to do it. If you want to leave us a review, do it on iTunes, or just let us know, email us, let us know what you think of the show. We always love to hear what you have to say. We always read everything you say, and very often we'll reply to it. By the way, if you can become a patron, you can join our Discord group. A lot of discussion going on in there as well. And we always pre-release the seasons, who's going to be coming up in the season, so you can see who not just our next episode is going to be, but every episode who we're going to be talking about. So go check out our Patreon and become a part of it. Help support the show. Even if it's just a couple bucks a month, we love it. We appreciate it. So next week, The Art of Noise, we're going to be beatboxing. I'm getting out my cardboard right now to lay on the floor so I can do some spins and some...
They also did a collaboration with the Fat Boys, which I'm really excited to talk about.
Oh, Fat Boys, Tom Jones, Dwayne Eddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so much stuff. So much good stuff with The Art of Noise. That's coming up next week. But that's going to do it for this week. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibbett saying good night and thank you for listening. We'll see you next time right here on The Soundography.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.